free energy now.
Imagine a world in which each home has its own power generator that obtains its energy in such a way that no fuel has to be added. Imagine every vehicle being able to run without ever stopping for fuel. Imagine each appliance having its own power source that never has to be recharged. That is the world of the future. Join with us now as we track our progress towards such a world.
Today, August 11th, you know, back up again, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Welcome to Free Energy Now. I'm your host, Sterling Allen. You can join us online at freeenergynow.net, where you can see a past lineup of speakers, download some past shows, and you can see what's coming down the pike. Today, we're actually doing a pre-record for the August 11th, 2008 show. Today is August 9th, and we have as our guest Rob Lampkin. He is CEO of Cool Earth Solar. They have developed an inflatable solar concentrator technology that slashes material costs, making solar farms competitive with commercial electricity generation systems, hopefully coming commercial within 3 years. Basically a Mylar that inflates, it's easy to replace. Rob, we thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, tell us about this technology. I forgot to mention, you're actually, the Cooler Solar has been in our top 100 technologies over there at the New Energy Congress, top100energy.com. I believe you're actually in the top 10, and I've been wanting to have somebody from your company on for a couple of years, and finally, we're doing it.
I'm glad we could finally make it happen. Thanks for having us.
You're certainly welcome. Well, tell us about your technology, kind of how it works, and what's this Mylar or whatever, this inflatable concentrated solar technology?
Well, Cool Earth has developed a breakthrough solar technology, as you mentioned. It can be developed in large enough scale to actually produce enough clean energy to directly address the global energy crisis. And the beauty of our technology is that we are not waiting for some future miracle or another technology breakthrough. It actually works today. And that makes us pretty excited at Cool Earth and what we're working on. Our technology uses no rare elements or expensive materials. And given that our technology is based on just standard commodity materials, our technology is scalable, and our architecture minimizes the use of those commodity materials, making use of materials such as thin film, plastic, and air. At the very core of our technology is our patented inflated solar concentrator. While our website is the best way to get a good picture on how our technology works, and that's at www.coolersolar.com, I will make an attempt to try to describe it here with words, but encourage folks to take a look at the website because a picture does so much better justice to this amazing technology.
You do have some great graphics and video and photographs and whatnot on your site that are very helpful.
Yes. Now, the video, that actually was not made by Cooler Solar. There's a video floating on YouTube. We're not sure who made the video. It's fairly representative of our technology, but not that close. But it does give a good perspective of how our technology may look. But the core of the technology is this inflated solar concentrator. And think of it as a large inflated balloon, almost like a party balloon you would see in a party store or in a grocery store, except our concentrators are 2.5 meters across or 8 feet across when they're fully inflated. We essentially take two pieces of plastic film, about 10 feet wide, and one piece is clear, and the second piece has a very thin aluminum coating, just a couple angstroms thick of aluminum, very, very thin. We seal those two pieces together, cut it in a circle, and inflate it. And the real miracle or gift of creation, if you will, is that when you take these thin film plastics and you seal them and inflate them, they spontaneously or naturally inflate into a shape which makes a very nice solar concentrator. It's not a perfect parabola, but it's a very nice solar concentrator, and it's at the core of our technology.
Now, of course, a number of questions come to mind as you talk along those lines. Of course, when you have something inflated, the air temperature will affect it, how much it's inflated. If it's cold, it will deflate. If it's hot, it will expand. How will that affect the function or performance?
That's very good. That's a very good question. What we do in our systems and in our power plants, which will be based on our core technology, is these concentrators will have active air management or air inflation to them. As you add air or take air away out of these concentrators, obviously the shape of the concentrator or the balloon will change. And it's very important to us that we control the shape, because that determines the focal point and the concentration factor of the sun onto the photovoltaic cell that's at the heart of this inflated solar concentrator. So we have active air inflation, active monitoring of the air to keep it pressurized at the right pressure to have the right optical shape of the thin film plastic concentrator. But the air pressure inside is only a third of a PSI. You know, a car tire, you know, has 30 pounds, 30 PSI. And so this is roughly one-tenth of that. Just one-third of a PSI is all the air inflation pressure that's inside the concentrator.
Barely over ambient. Ambient's one PSI, or...
It would be a third over that, yes. A third of a PSI over.
Mm-hmm. So that's not vacuum, is it? One third?
No. It's one third of a PSI pushing outwards.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Just very low pressure. But it's amazing, because the surface is so large, 2.5 meters, a third of a PSI spread across that whole surface. It's actually a very rigid and very strong structure. You place one of these on the ground, which is a third of a PSI, and a large grown man can jump on it and not pop it and rupture it. It's that strong of a structure.
Mm-hmm.
How the rest of the technology works is, once the light is concentrated by the inflated solar concentrator, up to 300 to 400 times magnification, or 300 to 400 suns, that is concentrated onto a PV cell, a typical photovoltaic cell that's inside the solar inflated solar concentrator. And so we're concentrating more light using this unique patented cooler technology. We're concentrating a lot more light on a small solar cell. And that's how we use this technology to produce solar electricity.
So what that does is it enables you to require fewer photovoltaic cells, which are very expensive. You concentrate the sunlight 300 times. And it's almost like multiplying 300 photovoltaic cells on a regular panel.
That's exactly correct. And that's absolutely key to the technology. As I mentioned earlier, we put this technology together in such a way so that it'll scale and it'll build quickly. You know, the promise of solar technology for so long has been that it's coming soon, it's going to be priced right, and it'll be available, abundantly available. But it takes a lot of time to make the amount of solar cells that we need. So what our technology does, as you described, is it just drastically reduces the amount of solar cells that you need to make the same amount of energy, you know, 300 or 400 times less.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you're talking about, I think I heard you right, saying that the PV cell is actually situated inside of this chamber.
Yes, that's correct. That becomes critical.
Is it affixed to the inside surface of the clear end of it, or is there some kind of a supporting structure that suspends it at a certain distance from the other side, the reflecting surface?
There's a steel strut, a metal pole, if you will, that suspends the PV cell receiver internal to the inflated concentrator. Again, it's somewhat hard to describe with words. The pictures do a much better job showing how it works, how it's laid out. But it works out to be critical that the focal point is internal to the concentrator. If the focal point of the concentrated light was outside the concentrator, the technology wouldn't work. You would burn through the films. You would not be able to concentrate the light on the cell if you had to go back through the film. So that its internal becomes absolutely central and core to the technology. And it has to be supported, the cell supported at the right spot where the focal point is. Think of like a magnifying glass when you're holding it in the sun. And there's that perfect focal point you're looking for in order to get the maximum magnification. Our inflated mirror is doing the same thing, creating a focal point, and there's an ideal point, and we want the cell at that ideal point inside the concentrator. And so there's a steel strut that's supporting the receiver in the exact right spot inside the inflated concentrator.
What are you doing about heat buildup? Because if you concentrate that much sunlight, it's going to be getting pretty hot in there.
You're absolutely correct. And the air doesn't heat up much. Plus, we have active air, and air is being circulated through. Where the heat buildup is happening to a very great extent is right on the PV cell itself. When you take 300 to 400 suns and concentrate it onto a PV cell, that would be very similar to taking two blowtorches and firing right on top of a solar cell. And as you would guess, that would burn up the solar cell instantly. So the other thing that we do with our technology is we water cool the backside of the solar cell. In order to dissipate that much heat and produce that much energy at these high concentration levels, you must cool these solar cells and keep them cool. And the way we do it is we have a very small water loop that's running up this strut and cooling the backside of the cell to keep it in the proper operating temperature range.
Are you doing anything with that heat? Are you pulling that off and using it to turn a turbine somewhere?
That would be a good thing to do if we could. We would like to be able to do that at some point. It turns out that the delta T, the change in temperature of the water coming to the back of the cell compared to the water exiting the back of the cell and going back out the balloon, is only about 7 to 10 degrees. And so that's a pretty small temperature rise in the water, critical to keep the cell operating and not burning up, but a pretty small temperature differential to be able to do anything with in terms of another regenerative production cycle.
And unlike, say, a trough solar collector where you want the heat to be building up and collecting over the distance of the trough as an oil, for example, is going through the focal point, you're trying to... The objective here is to keep the heat down, so each individual module is going to be relatively small, and you're not going to be adding from one to the next to boost the heat temperature from one array to the next. Every array is going to be at a fairly low temperature.
Mm-hmm. What we're doing with our technology that is nice is compared to other or some of the other concentrated solar technologies, they're trying to heat a fluid and heat it as hot as they can because they want to run that through a boiler or through a heat exchanger and then through a turbine, a very large turbine, a lot of moving parts, a lot of costs and expense. Our design is much simpler. We're concentrating light onto a PV cell, a photovoltaic cell like you would typically see on somebody's rooftop or on a roadside sign. And so we've minimized the moving parts, and we've minimized having to heat large amounts of fluid, run that fluid for yards, and then running it through a turbine. So we've reduced greatly the number of moving parts we need because we're taking all that valuable sunlight and converting it directly using a photovoltaic cell.
When you talk about the active air circulation and this water cooling system, is this being controlled per each module, or is it per, let's say, 10 modules in an array?
There'll be a small controller controlling the airflow into each and every concentrator. The water loop will be going through numerous inflated concentrators. There'll be a number on the same water cooling loop. But the air that we're wanting to control in each concentrator, we do that on a per balloon or per concentrator basis.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you use the word balloon, and I imagine that word probably comes up quite often in your industry.
It does, and I use them interchangeably. It is an insulated solar concentrator, but honestly, it does look like a balloon. So you'll often hear us at Cool Earth use the two terms interchangeably, but they're both descriptive of the core of the technology.
Now, you're talking about the photovoltaic cell, and I would imagine that you wouldn't be able to necessarily put just any old PV cell in there. There's probably certain types or certain brands that would be best for this type of concentrated system. Do you have one in particular that you have a contract with, or can you interchange a number of different ones so that doesn't become a long time in your supply chain?
You're so right. It does take a special type of cell. There's a type of cell that's basically made in such a way to just handle one sun of concentration. The panels or modules you would see on a rooftop, or typically what people think of as a solar PV panel, those cells are made in a way to just handle one sun of concentration. There's special techniques used in manufacturing, used in design, to create cells that are made by design to be able to handle 300, 400, even up to 1,000 times concentration, 1,000 times the power of the sun. At the base of how they're made is similar, but some of the design steps are different, and to create the cell that's made to operate in those higher concentration ranges. Having said that, you basically end up with two different types of cells that you could use in the Cool Earth concentrating technology plants. One is silicon. Silicon being the base material and what you see in what people mostly think of in PV cells. And then the second type being a dual junction or a triple junction cell that uses other materials like germanium and use other materials to create multiple bands instead of the single band gap in a silicon cell. You create multiple band gaps to capture more of the sun's energy. So as long as the cell is made to handle the higher concentration levels, whether it's a triple junction cell, a double junction cell, silicon or any of these different materials, it can be modified and designed in such a way to be used in our cooler systems.
Okay. I would imagine that the special types of cells you're talking about, side by side with the cells you might put on a rooftop that would handle one sun, that they're quite a bit more expensive, but since you're getting a 200, 300 fold concentration, it's not like they're going to be 200, 300 times more expensive.
That's correct. The triple junction cells do cost, you know, quite a bit more, often 20 times more than, you know, one sun silicon cell. But the efficiencies are also much higher. Instead of having an efficiency maybe in the high teens, you know, 18, 20%, maybe 22%, triple junction cells, high efficiency cells, that can operate 300 or 400 suns, often have efficiencies in the 35 to 40% range. So there's a greater cost, but you get the higher efficiency. And then there's other trade-offs with silicon and triple junction.
So for cell, you're getting two times as much sun or much electricity generated per the for the exposure, plus you've got the concentrator on top of that. So it might be 20 times more expensive, but because it's twice as efficient, that's more like 10 times as expensive.
And it turns out that the way the economics work is the trade-off, the critical part of the trade-off is what is the cost of all the balance of plant and systems and equipment that you have in order to concentrate the light?
Mm-hmm.
It turns out with the Cool Earth technology, since our system cost is so low that that the trade-off isn't that big of a difference. Using the cheaper silicon with the lower efficiencies, or the much more expensive triple junction with the higher efficiencies, it's almost a wash. We really can make our systems work, and the economics are very similar with both kinds of cells, which makes the cooler technology kind of unique in the CPV field.
I'm going to divert for a second. I'm just curious where the name Cool Earth came from and why that name was chosen.
The name was originally chosen by the founder of Cool Earth Solar, Dr. Eric Cummings. He was the, like I said, the original founder of the company. He's the key inventor under all of our patents that we hold as Cool Earth. And he was very driven, still is today, to develop a technology that can directly address and solve the global energy crisis that we're in. And a key part of that is the global warming greenhouse gas effect. And so the warming of the earth through the greenhouse gases, wanting to have a cool earth instead of a heating up earth, was obviously the link and where the name is. And the name sounds cool. So there you have it.
Okay. Talking back to the mechanics of this thing, one thing we've not addressed is how these things will be situated. Are you going to be rotating them so that they track the sun? Are you going to be putting them on some kind of an array? Are you going to track them together or singularly? What are you going to do when the wind blows? Let's address some of the mechanics of the deployment of these things.
Yes. It's absolutely critical that we track the sun. Unlike a flat panel one sun PV panel that you just put up on your roof or you put in the sunlight, and it can take sun it can convert the sun to electricity, even though the sun moves across the horizon and hits the panel at a bunch of different angles. With concentrating technology, you need to be pointed right at the sun. Almost like, think of, again, the magnifying glass example. Not a perfect analogy, but the magnifying glass, you need that pointed right at the sun. And if it's not pointed, if you don't have it lined up directly with the sun, you're not concentrating any of the sun light onto your focal point. So with our concentrated technology in Cool Earth, we have to track the sun as it moves across the sky. And that means north, south, east, west. And that's called two-axis tracking, you know, in both the north-south direction and the east-west direction. So as the sun comes up in the morning, gets higher up in the sky and the horizon comes down, we have mechanical systems that are keeping our inflated concentrator pointed right at the sun and tracking it as the sun moves across the horizon. That's the only way we're able to capture the sun's energy, concentrate it to such a large extent, and put it on the solar cell to produce the energy.
So are you doing that singularly with each balloon, or are you putting several balloons on one array and tracking them together?
Yes. There's a couple designs we're looking at. All the designs we're looking at have the concentrators gang together. Whether we will gang 10 together, 4 together, or 100 together, in some ways will depend on how the technology continues to build out and the locations we're building in and the size of the plant we're building. But we will always, I assume, be ganging multiple balloons together and tracking them as a group. Although there's nothing inherent in our technology that requires us to do it that way. It's just economics that'll drive whether we gang 4 together or 400 together.
I would imagine it's a combination of engineering, economics, and shipping. I mean, if you've got this humongous thing, it's going to have a hard time shipping it down the road to install it.
Yes, and if we were to gang 100 together, for example, we wouldn't ship it as a unit with 100 all gang together. What we would do is our system would be designed such, though, that it would be modular and in pieces. You'd get to the site, the power plant location, and you would assemble it there. A nice thing about our system is a lot of the mass is in the air, the inflation air we use. So we wouldn't ship our inflated concentrators full of air. They would be deflated balloons to be inflated once they were installed on the site.
Do they stack flat? You've got those little metal arms in there that hold the photovoltaic panel, and you've got the tubing that goes in to cool it down. How are you going to ship these things?
It's some of this is yet to be worked out in terms of how far we're shipping and what size plant. But normally what would occur is the balloons would be made, not inflated. They would be made, they would be laid flat and stacked and shipped that way. And then separately, you would have your metal strut and metal connecting parts that connect to the support poles. Those would get shipped separate boxes, if you will. And then the receiver itself, which is a 4 to 6 diameter part, which has a solar cell and the heat plate and the cooling section, that would be a separate unit also, most likely, and shipped separately. And then you have wood poles and some wire rope. But these would all be pre-assembled to some degree, but shipped separately to the site and then constructed on the site.
So you would have an opening on one end of the balloon that is laying flat. You would then insert the metal strut and the receiver into that and assemble it, blow it up. Are you doing any, I assume like a Mylar balloon, you've got around the perimeter of the balloon, you've got the two, the front and the back are annealed together. Then at the bottom where you're inserting the metal strut, are you going to have to seal that once you've got everything in there on site?
Yes. It's just how you described. There will be a port with a seal, and this port, you know, may be 6 inches by 6 inches approximately, and you will slide the strut through this port. There'll be a sealing gasket, and you will seal and then inflate. One might pre-inflate somewhat, get a little bit of air in the balloon so the strut goes in nice and nice and easy, and then you seal the seal and then finish inflation once you've done the full seal.
Let's talk about the durability of one of these balloon components. Obviously, you think of a balloon, you take a pin and you puncture it and it pops. Yours is, of course, going to be more rigid and sturdy than that. How much poking pressure, so to speak, could it withstand without popping or deflating? And what do you do when you have such a situation?
We don't like poking. I really worry about BB guns, too. I remember being 10 years old and having a BB gun and looking for something to shoot at. As far as what nature will throw at us, you know, the concentrators will stay inflated, sit out in the sun, and the plastic thin film manufacturers with the UV coating on the material will rate the plastic thin film out in the sun for 3 to 5 years. And we hope, and it's possible, that the films will last that long, like the manufacturers guarantee. We've assumed in our economics and plant designs that we're just going to replace these films every year. The plastic in these concentrators, the balloon part, is $2, maybe $3 worth of plastic. And so putting into our economics the plan to replace them each year isn't an issue for us at all. If they get punctured earlier, that, you know, boy comes by with a BB gun and wants to shoot something. Hope they don't want to shoot our solar concentrators, but if it happens and there's a small hole, what's nice about plastic thin film is if it doesn't rip or tear, if you don't get like a big tear across the material, a plant operator could go out with a little piece of clear packing tape, cover up the hole, the concentrator inflates back to its proper pressure, and we're off and running, and we're still producing electricity out of that solar concentrator.
I would imagine
if a concentrator gets riddled with holes, if we get too much tape on it, then it'll just be a more cost-effective just to replace the whole concentrator.
Yeah. I would imagine that the patching, I'm sure you're just speaking simplistically, would be more robust than packing tape, as that doesn't hold up under water and rain and stuff.
When we're using the packing tape, that's obviously not a long-term solution. It's made to get us maybe to the end of the life, you know. If we've got a couple more months before we intend that to replace that concentrator, you go that route. Or maybe you just want to seal the hole through the rest of the energy production day, and then that evening, when the sun is down, you replace the Mylar concentrator, or thin film concentrator.
One thing we've not talked about yet that is a very important question in the system is one of these balloons with the 300X, 400, or 200 to 300X concentrator in there, how much electricity are you generating per balloon?
If it changes somewhat depending if it's a silicon cell at the middle or triple junction, because we talked earlier about the different efficiencies and the different costs between the different PV material. If we were using a triple junction or a tandem junction cell with these 35 to 40% efficiencies, we'll be getting around 400 times concentration, and we'll be producing at peak around 1 kilowatt per inflated concentrator.
Okay. In terms of market, let's just jump ahead to the sales end of this thing. I would imagine that right now your primary target is going to be commercial utility scale, where you can have a whole bunch of these things in a farm type of arrangement. Are you also anticipating singular installations, say, on the top of a home or one at a time, or is it just going to be the economics are not going to work out on that level?
Initially, what we will be doing is just utility scale size power plants. And what I mean by utility scale is each plant will be 10 to 30 megawatts in size, which is enough to power kind of a small city or town. That's where we'll start. And a 10 megawatt peak solar energy power plant with cooler technology is about 100 acres in size, just to give you some context. So 10 to 30 megawatt power plants, that's what we'll be doing to start out right out of the gate. We'll be building our first one next year.
What
down
time
the road, we definitely want to deploy our technology off-grid in developing countries, which might be best suited to do much smaller installations. Instead of a 10 megawatt, maybe we'd want to do a 10 or 100 kilowatt size installation if we were off-grid or very rural or in a developing country. We will be going that way. Eric Cummings and I have talked quite a bit about this, and it's very much in our heart to want to deploy our technology, not just in large load centers and in on-grid and in developed countries, but it's Eric and my heart very much to be able to deploy the technology off-grid in the poorest of the poor countries where they have no electricity. And those plants and those facilities and deployments of our technology will look quite a bit different than what we're doing initially here in the States.
You were talking about the first one being installed next year. Where is that going to be and what part of the year?
Our first plant, actually what we're doing now, next month we'll be breaking ground on our kind of second generation prototype plant, and that'll be in Livermore, California. And that will be small. That will be, just 50, 100 kilowatts in size, just to prove out a little further our new designs around our technology. By this winter, we will be developing and building a 1 to 1.5 megawatt size plant. And that'll be just east of Livermore, not that far from our office. And then the big target, the big plan is by a year from now to be finishing the construction on our first full-size standard power plant, standard, if you will, 10 megawatts in size. So that'll be summer 2009. And that will be the plan that we will end up replicating in numerous locations across the western U.S.
Do you have a location for that yet?
That'll be in central California somewhere. There's a number of sites we're looking at. What's really nice about the cooler technology is we're not limited to a few narrow locations where we would have to go to put our technology. Our technology can go into farmland. We can have rolling hills. We don't need 1,000 acres of perfectly flat land in the desert in order to deploy our technology. We can go in some rural farmland like you see abundantly throughout central California and place our technology in locations like that. And since our technology is very modular, as you know, and we can do a 10-megawatt size plant, that gives us much more opportunity and many, many more locations that be available to us to size plants of that size.
Mm-hmm. Now, when we talk about solar, one of the obvious downsides of solar and wind is that it doesn't always shine and it doesn't always blow. So it's hard to have solar be a primary energy source in a grid scenario, for example. There needs to be some kind of a storage, or it needs to be tied to some other source of energy that can fill in the gap when the sun's not shining. Are there any types of approaches you're using to address that aspect to either store the energy or to supplement it with another source?
I'm glad you brought that up because I believe the issue of energy storage and the concern around energy storage is way overblown and way overemphasized. And let me describe what I mean. Right now, solar is serving much less than 1% of the energy needs of the world and the energy needs of the U.S. Solar would need to at least scale up to 20 or 30% of the total energy use before storage should be a concern for anyone. Now, if you're deploying solar completely off-grid, you're not connected to the grid at all, and you've got a solar facility, and you need energy when the sun isn't shining, then storage is of an immediate concern. But you look in the United States, and with our plants, where we're connecting directly to the grid, when solar is serving such a small fraction of 1% of the total energy load, storage is just not an issue whatsoever. I very much hope and pray that at some point, maybe it's 10 years down the road, 5 years, 15, I don't know, but I hope we find ourselves in a situation where we're sitting here saying, wow, solar is serving 30% of all the electric load in the United States, and we're starting to have a storage problem. We need to address this. That's a problem we should look for and welcome, but it's a long ways off before that becomes the critical issue, the real critical issue. Is we need to get more solar on, more wind on. We need it on now. Storage will become an issue down the road, but it's not an issue today, and I don't see it being an issue for 5 to 10 years at least.
You did mention in an off-grid scenario where this is the primary and only energy source in, say, a third world community, they're going to want to have lights at night. So are you going to have a grid-based storage situation, or would that be residential where each home, if they wanted to store some of the energy, they could have a little battery pack there at home? Maybe you weren't, you know, that's too far out and you haven't really thought through those questions. I'm just curious what the thinking is there.
You know, we have thought about it because, as we talked earlier, our heart is very much for deploying our systems off-grid, and Eric and I have chatted so much about that, about wanting and definitely deploying our systems off-grid, that we will have that issue to deal with. how we think about it today is, you know, the storage technologies that are out there today, whether it's, you know, capacitors, batteries, they aren't that cost effective when compared with the prices of grid power. But if you're off grid and you're producing your own wind and solar energy, the choices are pretty limited today on how you can store it. I hope that these storage technologies progress further than they are today, so they're more cost effective and more readily available when we get 5-10 years down the road and we as Cool Earth are just rolling out our technology all over the world and to off-grid customers.
Let's talk for a second about the rate of production. I would think that an advantage of your system would be that it would be easy to mass produce.
Yes. The Cool Earth technology, what's so exciting about it is we don't rely on any rare elements or rare materials, and we've designed the technology and systems to rely on cheap, readily available commodity materials like wood, stamped steel, galvanized metal, plastic parts. Thin film mylar is made in huge quantities in the world. I believe, if I have my numbers right, I might be wrong, but I believe last year the world produced over 700 billion pounds of plastic thin film. Huge quantity. The solar cells aren't made in that amount of huge quantity, but the rest of our technology, the plastic thin films, the plastic parts, the wood poles, all abundantly available materials, and that becomes key in us being able, as you were mentioning, for us to just be able to roll out our technology quickly and for us to grow and scale up manufacturing to produce this in large quantities, which is so much what is needed in order to address the global energy crisis we're experiencing. While it would be nice to have a really neat technology that was really clever and sweet, but if it only produced, if it could only be scaled up to produce a couple of megawatts or even gigawatts, that's not enough to move the needle and solve our global energy problem. So our technology was all developed keenly in mind with the need that it had to scale. It had to be able to scale quickly and up to large, massive quantities in order to have a real impact on the energy problem we're faced with today.
A major question we've not asked yet is, what kind of price point are you talking about once you're to that level where you've got your production plant, the 10 megawatt, and you're ready to hit the coffee button, and you're ready to start cranking these things out in an economy of scale? It's hard to talk about kilowatt, cents per kilowatt hour with solar and wind, because you're not paying for the fuel. It's more of capitalization costs. And I guess you talk more in terms of dollars per watt. But in a terminology that we can relate to, what is your price point going to be for your systems?
When we are doing plants at scale at our plant sizes, like we were talking about a year from now to 2 years from now, we believe we'll be at a price point around $1 a watt. To give that some context, a typical flat panel one sun PV system installed on somebody's rooftop today is around $7 to $8 a watt. And we believe a year to 2 years from now, we'll be able to install our systems for about $1 a watt.
And that makes it, the bottom line is that you are at or below or above, slightly above, let's say, coal and natural gas power in general.
At $1 a watt, we're definitely competing head-to-head and very favorably against natural gas.
Coal, right?
But not cheaper than coal, not at $1 a watt.
Okay.
But I've been seeing some new numbers coming out recently. Coal is being produced today from plants that were built at prices for less than $1 a watt. But some of the new cost estimates that have been coming out recently for coal plants, price of coal plants are going up. They're creeping higher. I'm not an expert in that area, so I can't say. are they 50 cents a watt, 75 cents a watt? I don't know. We believe coal is appears to be somewhat cheaper than that, but that could be changing very soon. But I'm glad you brought up coal, because that's exactly our target and what we're going after. We believe it's great to be able to compete head-to-head with natural gas, and we plan to be proving that when we get to the end of the year. But the big target to go after is coal. Those are the plants that are putting out most of the emissions. And a lot of projects, new power projects, should be being planned based on coal. So that's the real target. That's the real price point where we want to get to as soon as we can.
I would imagine that 5 years from now, for example, there may be enough improvements in the design of your system, cheaper ways to do things, and new breakthroughs in photovoltaic technology that you may be able to, you know, cut your price yet again by half 5 years, so you're now competing with coal as well.
That's certainly a real possibility. We know we can get to $1 a watt in the next year or so. How quickly we can get to 50 cents a watt, not sure. Depends on how fast we scale and how fast we grow. What's exciting about the cooler technology, though, is that it's very possible and conceivable and reasonable to assume we could get to 50 cents a watt. If you add up the pounds of plastic, steel, and wood we have in our systems, there's so little mass of those commodity materials that just in a raw material cost into our systems, just for our part of the plant, is around 10 cents a watt. So there's room for us to drive the cost lower as we produce at larger scale. How far we drive it down and what time frame, I guess that'll depend on how well we execute, how smart we are, how diligent we are, and how fast we can scale up the technology and manufacturing.
One thing we've not addressed yet that I would imagine would be a fairly significant factor here would be wind. Are you going to, at what wind level, are you going to decommit or take down or deflate so that these things are not flapping all over the place or blowing and twisting and torquing in the wind?
Yes, that's a great question. Wind is something we definitely designed for. While an inflated balloon is a very strong and very rigid structure, and while our systems, our rigging structure, which will support and tether these balloons and support them above the ground and track the sun and keep everything in place, while those are very rigid, we do need to design to be able to handle wind loads and wind speeds. What we're currently designing into our systems today is that we will be able to produce energy just fine without much degradation in a wind speed of 30 to 40 miles an hour. Above 40 miles an hour, we're designing our system so that above 40 miles an hour, we start losing power production and we'll probably just start shutting the plant down. Overall, the systems are designed so that if winds are 125 miles an hour, the plant will stay intact and won't destruct in the windstorm. But we're certainly not producing any power at 125 miles an hour, no matter how much sun is shining. We've shut the system down. Plant's not producing power, but it's not getting destroyed by the wind. Now, we could, it's very possible, we could design our system with the rigging and support structures so that a 50 or 60 mile an hour wind, we could be tracking the sun and producing power. The issue, though, is we're having to put so much more steel into the system to be able to hold everything tight in order to produce power at those wind speeds. That's just not economical to do so. Normally, at least in the western U.S., when the sun is shining bright and you're really wanting to produce that energy off the sun, you're not getting, 40-plus mile-an-hour winds. On those rare days that you do, we'll just shut down, and the thought is, the full intent is, we're designing our systems for most, nearly all conditions, but it's not necessary for us to over-design the plant for those rare days where you have a nice bright sun and the wind is going 50 miles an hour.
So if you get 125 plus and things are starting to tear apart, you're just going to have to go in and replace that, or are you going to have a contingency plan so you go in and you retrieve your the cheap part is the plastic, but the receivers and the struts and all that kind of stuff, that's not cheap. So how are you going to salvage a catastrophic situation?
What will fail first is the inflated concentrator. And, each concentrator is $2 to $3 worth of plastic. A wood pole with a steel strut attached to it, with a metal receiver bolted to it, we'll be able to handle some pretty good wind speeds. So the inflated concentrator probably goes first, rips loose and tears off. But the rest of the metal will hold up to higher speeds. The key with the technology, though, is, while you could deploy it in an area that could see those kinds of wind speeds, where hurricanes hit or tornadoes hit, we would need to design the system much different to handle those higher wind speeds. Central California, desert southwest of the United States, we're not seeing 125 mile an hour winds, so we're not so concerned about it in the first, gigawatts worth of power plants we're building. But if we want to locate to an area where those kinds of winds are possible and or likely, we'll want to design the systems more stiff. You're absolutely correct.
Good. We need to wrap her up here. I do have one final question I'd like to ask, and this will have to be a quick answer. Former Vice President Al Gore challenged the United States to go 100% renewable within 10 years. What percentage of that portfolio do you think could be accounted for by Cool Earth solar technology?
We at Cool Earth were just so pleased to hear that message get out and that challenge to do 100% renewable energy, as you just described. And we think that should not only just be a goal or something to talk about. We think it should be something aggressively pursued and gone after. In order to get to those kinds of percentages, though, it's going to take technologies that are going to be able to scale and scale fast, because that's hundreds of gigawatts worth of power. And 100% of the United States energy needs is like 1.5 to 2 terawatts of power. I believe those numbers are correct. That's a lot of power plants, and that's a lot of energy. And it's clear to us at Cool Earth that solar would have to play a very large role. That is so much energy and so much power plants. Wind is not going to be able to do it by itself. A big percentage of that, probably over half of it, is going to have to be solar in order to get those kinds of numbers and meet that very important challenge that was laid out. So there's a lot of ifs there, a lot of assumptions. But if those are all true, then solar's got to be a big role. We see Cool Earth technology as one of the key technologies, and maybe the only one that it's the only one we're aware of that can scale up to those kinds of sizes and those number of megawatts in such a short number of years.
Well, Rob, we thank you for joining us. This is Sterling Ann with the Free Energy Now radio show. We've been talking with Rob Lampkin, CEO of Cool Earth Solar. You can see them online at coolearthsolar.com. We also have them at pezwiki.com under Cool Earth. I believe if you Google Cool Earth Solar, our page is about third or fourth after yours. So, again, we thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much. Real pleasure. I appreciate the time.
You're certainly welcome.
You've been listening to Free Energy Now, brought to you by PES, Your Energy Systems. You may access past archives and upcoming show info at freeenergynow.net and join us for our daily news at freeenergynews.com. We invite you to see our directory of energy technologies at peswiki.com. That's peswiki.com. PES, the Pure Energy Systems Information Network.